Good evening. I'm Jim Zirin, and you are watching The Digital Age. With us tonight is Abraham D. Sofair. Abe Sofair was a legal advisor to the United States State Department under Secretary of State George P. Shultz. He has written a compelling new book entitled Taking on Iran, which could not be more timely in light of recent events at the UN and elsewhere, which may signal an important diplomatic breakthrough in our negotiations with Iran over its nuclear program. Abe is an old friend, and we're delighted to have you with us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Now, in your book, you argue that there are kind of two Irans, maybe three Irans, the Iranian people, the Iranian government, and there's the Republican Guard. And as I understand your argument, you think we should confront the Republican Guard more than we have.
That's right. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, as we call it, is a part of the government of Iran. Officially, it is in the Iranian constitution that there should be an Iranian Revolutionary Guard that is supposed to defend the Islamic nature of the country. And part of that is the so-called Quds Force, which is the group that's run by a general named Soleimani, and that operates abroad, basically in charge of assassinations, right now in charge of the effort in Syria to help Assad stay in power, and under the Ayatollah's, the Grand Ayatollah's command, in charge of the nuclear program and the missile program. They have their own Navy, Air Force,
and Army. The Supreme Leader, Khamenei.
Right.
And they have their own Air Force?
Yeah, they have their own military units, and it's something people don't realize. The Iran really is divided between the regular forces and national security structure and the IRGC, which is the part of the structure that is given the job of preserving the Islamic nature of the revolution.
Now, an example of what the Quds Force may do is this case just this past September 11th, where the Israelis arrested an Iranian spy at Ben-Gurion Airport who said he'd been trained by the Quds. Have you followed
that
at all?
Yes, absolutely. And also the effort to blow up the Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C., a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, the Quds Force members, including all the way up to Soleimani, have been named by the U.S. Department of Justice and the Treasury Department as being responsible for having engineered that, which only fell apart because of a chance occurrence. That is, the person they went to do this job was at that point cooperating with the FBI, and we happened to learn about it.
Now, you relate that the Quds Force was responsible for the attack on the Khobar Towers in 1996 in Saudi Arabia, which resulted in the death of a number of American servicemen, wounded hundreds of other American servicemen. It's the same group, isn't it?
It's the same group. They worked with the Hezbollah of Saudi Arabia, funded the operation, and blew up these barracks, which killed or wounded hundreds of U.S. airmen.
So you argue that we have to confront the Republican Guard and the Quds Force more directly and indeed with the use of force, and we failed to do so.
We failed to confront them directly or indirectly. And this is not a question of a partisan issue. That started with Reagan himself. I was there in the administration. We threatened the Quds Force and the Iranians and Hezbollah for the Marine Barracks bombing in 1983 and the bombing of our embassies, two bombings. But we actually did nothing. They killed hundreds of our soldiers and Marines. And we said we would never leave, but we did. We left. So they got a very important message then, which was only followed up in extremely demoralizing and devastating to our anti-terrorism policy when we engage in the Iran-Contra affair with the Iranians instead of living up to our principle that we would not trade arms for hostages.
You further say that we have to couple a direct confrontation with Republican Guard with robust diplomatic engagement, and they go hand in hand.
That's right. We haven't tried either strength or diplomacy with Iran. It was in Congress for me as legal advisor watching both our relationship with the Soviets, where we were trying both in a very serious way, strength and diplomacy, and watching what we were doing with Iran, where we're engaging in no efforts vis-a-vis strength other than the one effort in 86, 87, where we stopped them from mining the Gulf anymore. Our diplomatic efforts with Iran were pathetic, inconsistent, unprofessional. People say, oh, negotiating with Iran is a waste of time. We've never negotiated with Iran in a serious way. If you know anything about diplomacy, you know that first you have to start with strength. If you don't have any strength, they're not going to take you seriously.
Dean Acheson said we have to negotiate from strength.
And, I mean, everyone recognizes that. Right now, I was heartened when I saw the president's comment after the Syrian resolution through this. He said, we would never have achieved this resolution relating to Syria's chemical weapons if I hadn't threatened to bomb their capacity, to attack their capacity to deliver chemical weapons. And I think he's right. I think it would have made it greatly concerned the Russians because they don't want to see Assad fall. And for the very first time, they came to the negotiating table on the issue of Syria. And so I only hope that the president will apply that lesson to the IRGC, not to Iran in general, not to Rouhani, who is, of course, a cold-blooded insider, but nonetheless someone who is associated with and was elected for the purpose of trying to stabilize relations with the West. So I think there's a real prospect of negotiating with Rouhani, but we need to be strong vis-a-vis the Iranian Revolutionary Guard because they are going to try to knock this negotiation right off the tracks. And you've seen that already with three recent announcements. One was the attack on the Navy, the cyber attack on our Navy computers. This thing in Tel Aviv, where they seem to have targeted the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv, you're going to have, and their statements vis-a-vis Rouhani have been pretty aggressive. That you better watch yourself, don't step out of line.
Going down any dark alleys.
There are no moderates in Iran, but there is a big difference between Rouhani and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps.
But nevertheless, you're encouraged that we've seen the first high-level contact between the United States and Iran in 35 years.
Absolutely. And who do you want to deal with? A guy like Khatami was a nice guy. He intended well. He just didn't have the Ayatollah's ear or confidence. Rouhani was the secretary of the Supreme National Security Council for many years. He knows how Iran operates. He knows how the Guard operates. He knows Rafsanjani, who's a close associate of his. So he knows the ropes. And if Rouhani really means it and really wants to create a situation in which he will agree to an overall arrangement that refutes any reasonable concern that they are going to build a nuclear weapon, he could do it.
Well, he said he was a moderate when he came to New York. He was elected as a moderate, and he certainly talked in a much more conciliatory way than his predecessor, Mr. Ahmadinejad. He waffled a little bit on the Holocaust, but he certainly was not so categorical in denying that it had occurred. We do see a difference. Rouhani was educated in England. His closest advisor was educated in the United States, and so is his foreign minister, Mr. Zarif. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing a new generation of Iranian leaders who might take a a more reasonable line?
Well, I don't know. It's a new generation. They are higher quality people, much more connected. But I wish the president would point out that he hopes there's more substance to what Rouhani says about the nuclear weapons program and what he's ready to do about it than what he says about human rights policy in Iran,
yeah,
or Iran's love and protection of democracy. I mean, they execute a lot of people just because of their religion. The Baha'i are regarded as, you know, cockroaches, whatever they call them. And they homosexuals are killed, you know, whenever they are
Well, Ahmadinejad said there are no homosexuals.
Yeah, there aren't. Yeah, they're trying hard to eliminate them. And I think the president really needs to take a page from the Reagan approach to the Soviets and remind Rouhani and the world through him that he's not accepting all the nonsense that Rouhani handed out in his speech, and that really Iran has to come to grips with the need to be tolerant about religion, because right now they are the Shia leadership of what has to be called a genocidal war between the Shia and Sunni in the Middle East, which is a catastrophe for humankind.
Well, let's look at Iran's nuclear program for a moment. I mean, when Rouhani was here, he said that they had achieved industrial strength enrichment. They have opened a new reactor. They've undoubtedly stepped up their capacity for a breakout to a bomb in short order. So all the while, he's talking about negotiation about their nuclear program. And then we have, on the other hand, Israel saying that they must dismantle their nuclear program and not enrich at all. We must dismantle their capacity to enrich. So where is the room for negotiation in these two hardline positions? Rouhani says he has a right to enrich. Netanyahu says they have no right to enrich. And presumably, whatever deal is made with the United States, we're not going to sell Israel down the river, and we'll have to take into account their views on the matter.
Well, I think we will take into account Israel's views, but there's a big difference between what Netanyahu said with regard to the need to keep the sanctions on and to keep the pressure on until a deal is done, an entire deal is done. Let's not have partial lifting of sanctions in exchange for gestures or nice statements. He's completely right about that. But as a practical matter, to say that Iran has no nuclear rights just because Israel is uncomfortable about it is just not going to fly with the Permanent Five, Germany, or anyone else involved in this. The fact is that Iran in the past has suspended enrichment for a period. They have actually offered at various points and came very close to shipping out a lot of their enriched uranium. They don't need all the uranium they have already enriched.
They're energy rich. They don't need uranium.
Well, I mean, the NPT allows them to have an enrichment capacity at this stage. They might be persuadable in exchange for an overall relationship for who knows to agree not to enrich. I doubt it. I think we have to realize that the request that Netanyahu made, no further enrichment, removal of all enriched uranium, closing all the plants, stopping the heavy water reactor that could produce plutonium, all these things are desirable things to get, especially now during a period where Iran is really still saying horrible things about Israel. There's no doubt that the international community would settle for less than that. And what Rouhani said, we will modify our program, our nuclear program, in such a way as to refute any reasonable concern that we're building a nuclear weapon. If that translates into a real set of concrete protections and activities, I would imagine that the rest of the international community would accept that.
Well, when he was here, he said Iran will never develop a nuclear weapon.
Right.
And allegedly, the Ayatollah issued a fatwa against the use of nuclear weapons, although researchers in Washington say they could find no trace of the fatwa anywhere. But let's assume he did. I mean, should we trust them? Or is it trust but verify, the old axiom?
Well, Netanyahu in his speech said distrust but verify. Well, I mean, I think Reagan meant distrust and verify when he said trust and verify.
Trust but verify.
Yeah, I think there's a certain style of here that's missing. Reagan, for all his willingness to negotiate with the Soviets, was very tough. He was genteel in the way he talked about them and in his meetings with them, but he called them the evil empire. Regime engagement is something I advocate in my book, and I think the president's right not to challenge the regime. We tried that. We've tried all these undercut the regime, you know, support all the opponents. I've heard that now for 30 years, and nothing's happened. I think it was much more effective with the Soviets, where we said, you're an evil empire. We'll talk to you. We'll, even though you shoot down the Korean airliner and kill hundreds of innocent civilians, we'll talk to you because it's in our interest to do so. But don't think we trust you. We don't. And anything you commit yourself to, we're going to want verification. And we're going to match every wrong you do. We're going to push back against you. We're going to push back against you in Afghanistan, in Nicaragua, in Grenada if you act through Cuba. We're going to do those things to keep you advised that we really mean it. We're going to push you every time you push the Western world or a democracy. And when they put missiles into Europe, everybody screamed when Reagan said 0-0. We're going to put intermediate range missiles to Europe. And we're not taking them out until you take all yours out. And ultimately, we got that. So you can be tough, but be charming. There's no harm in our being as charming as Rouhani is trying to be.
Oozing charm.
There is absolutely no harm in it. We need to sell our position just as much as they're trying to sell theirs.
So what would you argue our approach should be to these negotiations, which have been given a year to play out? We have an important year ahead of us in foreign policy and international affairs. What should we be doing?
I think we should be saying truth to the Iranians. Every time they say something like, we protect everybody in our country, they have political rights, they have religious rights, etc., we ought to remind them. We ought to broaden our agenda with them, just as we did with the Soviets. We ought to be talking about more than just the nuclear program. We ought to be talking about trade. We ought to be talking about all the things they care about, human rights. We ought to be talking in more fora than just the P5+1. That is far too formalistic, a forum. Everybody goes to one of those meetings, they talk to their own constituency on TV before they go in the room with the Iranians. The Iranians do the same thing. They're as concerned about their constituency as we're concerned about ours. So they will say, as we say, we're not going to agree to anything that's going to hurt our interests or hurt our nuclear program. Then they come out of the meeting and they say, in front of the same TV cameras, we didn't. Don't worry. We didn't agree to anything. And I mean, that is not a diplomatic forum that's conducive to progress. So I think we need to broaden the agenda, increase the places and types of places we're talking to them. We need to talk to them about their claims. They take money very seriously. And I negotiated the claims with Iran for 5 years. They were very pleased when we made settlements of their claims rather than forcing them to litigate for many, many years. And those settlements were in our interest. Every settlement I negotiated with the Iranians gave us a significant discount to what we owed them and got them to pay us significantly faster than they otherwise would have. So it's like anything else. Be effective. That's the bottom line. don't give up on strength until you know it's over. And open up. Treat the regime as though they're entitled to be engaged with.
They want respect.
Right. Don't expect them to behave themselves, because you're not talking about Rouhani here. You're talking about the guard. They're going to go on doing horrible things around the world. And don't stop talking to Rouhani, because they are doing those things, because that's what they want. They want us to stop talking to Rouhani. And I'm not saying Rouhani is a big moderate and they're a big. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there are two different agendas in Iran. One is, let's stay on track. We don't have to make this deal with the U.S. and the West. We can do it all. We can be aggressive and revolutionary. We can spread Shiism all over the Middle East and have a nuclear weapon. And the other group is saying, hey, look, you're leading us into a catastrophe, an economic catastrophe and a political catastrophe. We don't need to do all those things. We can have a very successful country, economic progress, tremendous influence without a nuclear weapon. And I think that we need to be part, we need to act with an awareness of that. We need to stop embarrassing them at home. Stop taking credit for everything they do that we want them to do, so that they can do more things that we want them to do. And Reagan said this well. He said, don't crow. He said to Brezhnev, I will not crow if you release those Christians from our embassy and let them leave the country. And he didn't. What he did instead was he thanked the Soviets for releasing the Christians. And that was the model he adopted from then until the very end of his administration with the Soviets. Everything was the opposite with Iran. A lot of rhetoric, threats, et cetera, et cetera. We really have to understand the Iranians have the same problem domestically we have, domestically, in selling things that we want them to do for us. And so let's make that easier for them to do.
So you believe that we're to some degree at fault in terms of how we've approached Iran over the last 35 years?
A very substantial degree, absolutely.
Because we've isolated them in the world. We've frozen their assets. Of course, they blame us for deposing Mossadegh, who was their democratically elected leader. And so they have a long list of grievances against us as well.
Well, we mean well, but we've fallen for these kind of charm offensives, which they've pulled on us every now and then, because they want more time to build their bomb.
They did that in 2005, 2006.
Sure.
With the Isfahan reactor.
Right. And they totally faked out the Clinton administration. I don't mean that Khatami didn't mean it. I think he did mean it. But I think Clinton and his team misjudged what could really help Khatami. And as a result, they did nothing about Khobar Towers, thereby essentially strengthening the Iranian Revolutionary Guard domestically. And they kept giving Khatami all these things. And then he keep coming back for more. I want you to lift some more sanctions. I want you to make an apology for the your effort with bringing down your involvement with bringing down the prior Iranian government. And they made an apology. It was we're to blame as well. And, Albright made the two speeches to the Asia Society. It was really a flawed strategy. Well meant, clearly well meant. But we've tried it. We've tried that. Let's actually try strength against the IRGC. And I think that will benefit Rouhani and not harm him at all.
In approaching the negotiation, should their nuclear capability be the starting point, or should it be the end game? Should we try to reach agreement on many of these issues you've described first and then go to the nuclear issue, or should we start with the nuclear
issue? I think we should do what we did with the Soviets again. The Iranians, incidentally, hate when anyone talks about equating them with the Soviets and how we handle the Soviets. They hate it because it's so much the right way to deal with them. We should have we had four buckets of issues with the Soviets. Human rights was one of them, trade, commerce, the Middle East and relations with other countries, and nuclear missiles, all that whole thing. And I think we should have teams of negotiators dealing with each thing. In the case with Iran, we should be dealing with the claims in a much more serious way. I settled thousands of those claims, and I think it did help Iranian-U.S. relations when I was in charge of the claims and things were moving forward. We should move all on all these fronts. So every time our leadership engages with them, there's progress. We've got two agreements here, one agreement there. You know, people say, the Iranians aren't like the Soviets. You know, the Soviets, oh, there's a memory now of the Soviets. I guess what? That they were nice, humane people? This is absurd.
Abe, I'm afraid we've run out of time.
Well, they were
killers.
This
is absolutely marvelous, and I wish we could continue. But let me ask you a question. Are we doing enough to take on Iran? Yes or no?
No.
No, we're not. Abe Sofer, thank you so much
pleasure.
For coming by.
Pleasure, Jim.
And thank you for coming by. Tune in next week for more on the digital age. For the digital age, I'm Jim Zirin. Please visit our website at www.digitalage.org. Good night and all the best.